from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, support is building here in D.C. to revisit the $1.3 trillion spending bill signed into law less than 2 weeks ago. What are the prospects that the president will push for and Congress will agree to surgical reductions in the massive spending bill? We'll talk about it with Chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows, in just a moment. We'll also discuss with him the president's ordering of National Guard troops to our nation's southern border as thousands of migrants make their way through Mexico towards the U.S. Also, earlier this week, we discussed with Senator Lindsey Graham, the president's suggesting he would pull U.S. troops out of Syria. The president has now announced that that is not the case. The U.S. will complete its mission in the war-torn country. FRC's Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin will be here to explain why that is a good decision. And Christian privilege. Have you heard of that? I hadn't, but who knew that that was something worthy of being taught on a college campus? George Washington University thinks Christians have it easier than others. Really? Have they not noticed the record number of Christians being martyred around the globe for their faith? Michael Jones, a student at Auburn University and contributing reporter with College Fix, is following the story and will join us a little later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, tomorrow it will be just 2 weeks since President Trump signed the $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill into law. After a number of lawmakers went home to their districts, those who voted for it got an earful. Those who voted against it got a pat on the back. Well, even the president recognizes now there might be a need to do some trimming. Is there a way to do it, and will it be done? With us now, Congressman Mark Meadows. He represents the 11th Congressional District of North Carolina. He serves on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, Foreign Affairs Committee, and he is the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be back with you and obviously with your listeners. And it's a critical time, and you're right. We went back to the district, and many of us got to hear an earful from our constituency on this omnibus. Fortunately, I was one of the ones that voted against it, but it is very troubling for a lot of people who thought that Washington, D.C. was going to be different this time around under President Trump.
Yeah, Mark, the Freedom Caucus, I think every member of the Freedom Caucus voted against the omnibus bill, and you clearly sent a message to the president ahead of time saying this is not a good thing, you should veto it. The president talked about it, he almost did, but then at the last moment he did sign it. But there are discussions taking place about using a procedure to pull this thing back and trim it down.
Well, there is. There's a rescission vehicle that allows us to go back, and with a simple majority vote in the Senate, and certainly has to pass the House, but we can trim back part of that $1.3 trillion that we actually authorized just a couple of weeks ago. Now, here's the key, Tony. It needs to be more than talk. The American people and your listeners, they're smarter than this, and they know that if we just put up a show vote in the House and say, we're going to rescind this amount of money or cut back here and not actually get a vote in the Senate and pass it in the Senate, send it to the president, all it's going to be is just another disappointment. So it's critically important that your listeners call their members of Congress and say, you know, we're supporting you in this, but also we want you to be serious about it so that it's not just a messaging bill.
So, Congressman Mark Meadows, how does that process begin? Does Congress take the first step? Does the White House take the first step? How will that take place?
Well, Congress will need to take the first step. I will say that there's been some real good work that has happened in the last week or so. You know, Tony, you and I have talked about it and about the priorities that are important to moms and dads, aunts and uncles on Main Street, that we need to make sure that we address this in this piece of legislation. But I can tell you the president is very serious about that. He's encouraged it. I know some of our leadership has been with the president as recent as yesterday discussing some of these issues. And so I fully expect that within the next week to 10 days, we'll be voting on it in the House, sending it over to the Senate. And again, it doesn't take 60 votes in the Senate. It only takes 50 votes. So the last time I checked, we have a 50-vote margin that we can work with, as long as we don't get a thumbs down from, you know, a couple of our more moderate Republican senators. We should be in good shape in sending it to the president for his signature and actually being able to roll back some of this spending.
Well, Congressman Meadows, it sounds like there could be a silver lining to this massive spending bill, because if you can pull it back, trim it strategically, surgically, with a simple majority vote in the Senate, this sounds like you might be able to get some things done you couldn't have gotten done before.
Well, it could be the silver lining. One of the things that the reasons why this president signed the omnibus is because it did indeed give our military men and women the resources they needed. It gave them a pay raise, long overdue pay raise, I might add. And so as we look at that, there was some of the good in the omnibus is that it actually increased our national security initiatives and gave plenty of resources there. Along with that, it came in at an extremely high cost of where we were growing the size of government at 13%. So if we can pull back, we can say, okay, on some of these more liberal initiatives that were funded, can we go ahead and make sure that we roll that back? I believe that we can. Again, it's going to take intestinal fortitude. It's also going to take some strength from some of our appropriators on the Republican side. You know, a lot of them put forth efforts to sign into law what we actually signed in. And so it's going to take calls from some of your listeners to some of those key members of Congress to make sure that they're on board as well.
So from a standpoint of when the House takes this up, is it a percentage reduction, or will they be able to go specifically into items such as the funding for Planned Parenthood and some of these other spending measures that are inconsistent with what Republicans who are in the majority have said they were going to do?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because Planned Parenthood is one of those major disappointments, the fact that we didn't defund that. The president campaigned on that. Many Republicans campaigned on that. And yet the funding level, some you will hear them talk about, well, we didn't add any money for Planned Parenthood. Well, no, they didn't add any, but they didn't cut any either. And there's still $500 million plus going to Planned Parenthood each and every year. And we've got the ability to cut back. So in answer to your question, what we can do is we can go specifically by section within different aspects of the funding. And it doesn't have to be just across the board. We can come in and say, okay, we're going to cut X number of dollars from this program. We can trim back another program. And so we can actually go in and make a more targeted and strategic way of actually cutting it back. So it doesn't have to be an axe that cuts it. It can be a scalpel, and that's the beauty of this particular procedure.
Well, folks, to me, that sounds like a golden opportunity to not only cut government spending, because the message has been delivered, as Congressman Meadows said, but here we can actually get at what has been promised. And, Mark, I would remind folks that not only did the president campaign on it and many members of Congress campaign on the defunding of Planned Parenthood, it's in the party platform. This is one of those items that's in the party platform. This said, this is one of our objectives. This is what we're going to do.
Well, you're exactly right. It's in our party platform, and many fine conservatives worked on that. I know that you and your team had a hand in that as well. And so it's critically important that we do that. But it goes well beyond just the Planned Parenthood funding. It goes a lot of initiatives, which actually in the president's budget were zeroed out. The monies went the opposite direction. And I would say that in the going the opposite direction, you will not right. find those priorities in the Republican platform. You probably find them in the Democrat platform. And that's why mm-hmm. it's critically important that we feel the pressure and the heat to do the right thing in the coming days.
You know, that's a good point, because people have forgotten. In fact, I forgot about the president. The administration actually proposed a budget. I don't know. It's been 6 months ago or so. And it was actually a really good budget. It zeroed out some of these leftist organizations, these liberal government agencies, National Endowment of the Arts and different ones that conservatives for years have been fighting. He actually zeroed them out in his budget. But yet Congress, in fact, in the final days, before there was even a bill, we saw the projections go from in the last 48 hours from $1.2 trillion to $1.3 trillion just in 48 hours.
Well, I mean, you're exactly right. So it was Christmas time in March for many of these special interest groups in Washington, D.C. And you're right, it actually continued to escalate up. And so, you know, there were some who said, go ahead and get the vote done right away so it doesn't get any higher. For me, I think you need to read the bill before you vote on it. And I find it just unbelievably irreconcilable to actually vote on a bill that not a single member of Congress had the opportunity to read, couldn't physically read it. And we've got to do better than that.
Yeah, 2,200-page bill. It was just physically impossible given the time that you had to read it. Congressman Mark Meadows, one final comment. You said a week to 10 days. So should we, when Congress returns next week from the resurrection week break and being back in the districts, this is a work week in the districts, do you think we'll see something the first part of the week begin to move on this?
I think what you'll start to see is the talk about it start right away. What will happen is we'll go back in on Monday. On Tuesday morning, a conference will be brought together of all the Republican members. It will be brought up there. The discussion will pick up in earnest on Tuesday and Wednesday. I don't anticipate a bill until the following week, but certainly they need to hear from people on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday of next week. So from an action item standpoint, if you'll reach out to you know, all those that are listening now, if you'll reach out to your members of Congress next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and say, let's cut some of the money that you appropriated a few weeks ago, I think that would be a good, simple message to send.
All right. Well, we'll obviously do that, and we'll be tracking this very, very closely in the next week and a half. Congressman Mark Meadows, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for taking time out to join us.
Thank you, Tony. God bless you. God bless America.
All right. Have a great great weekend. Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, just a champion for the things that we care about. So you heard your homework for today. You need to reach out to your member of Congress and your two senators, telling them, hey, you got an opportunity. Cut this massive spending bill. Here's the switchboard number. They're not here, but they'll connect you with their office and you can talk to their staff. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. I mean, really, folks, this is a great opportunity because this may be the way we get to defund Planned Parenthood, cut out some of these wasteful social programs, and trim the budget down to size. So this is the opportunity. So weigh in with your member of Congress and your two senators, 202-224-3121. And we're going to stay on this, keeping an eye on this as this develops further. All right. I didn't even get to the border issue. I'll talk about that later. All right. Coming up next, President Trump saying troops will stay in Syria. Retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, our own FRC general, is here next to talk about that. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, while National Guard troops head to the southern border, in recent days the Trump administration had suggested the U.S. troops that were in Syria might be pulled out. Well, President Trump has announced that is not the case, saying U.S. forces will not be leaving the war-torn country in the near future. Joining us now, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He was one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force. He now serves as the Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. General, we've been actually discussing the issue. I'm going to take up first the National Guard troops. You know, there was talk about sending troops to our southern border. The President has said he's going to be sending National Guard troops, best as we can tell from the information we're gathering, conversations we're having with members of the White House, is that they will be under the authority of the respective governors of those states, and they will be, even in most cases, serving a supporting role of federal agents that are on the borders.
Yeah, that's right. And it's important to remember that on a day-to-day basis, the National Guard, unlike the reserves, the National Guard actually works for the governor. They are only federalized under Title 10 when the president sees a need for additional forces. So I think that what he has suggested here and what he intends to implement is a good way to go about helping to protect our border at a time when the Border Patrol is just so bogged down with so many tasks and such a long border that they have to deal with. I think this is a good move on the president's behalf.
Yeah, and this is not the first time a president, going back to President Clinton, sent troops to the border. You had both President Bush and Obama sent guard troops, National Guard troops, to the border. And you have the governors of the border states, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, welcoming this, uncertain what the Democratic governor of California that has created the sanctuary cities, what he'll do, which could be a problem. Because, again, these will be under the control of the governors of the respective states, which is how our system of government works.
Yeah, that's right. And, if you just think about this for a minute, Governor Jerry Brown is no question he's not going to cooperate with the president on this. And he's not going to want any National Guard troops on the border of California. So what does that mean? It looks to me like it means if they can't get in through Texas, Arizona, or New Mexico, we're going to have an awful lot of people trying to get across the border of California because there won't be any National Guard there.
Yeah. What the federal government could do, the administration, is redeploy more of the federal agents that have border security responsibilities to California and backfill with the National Guard in the other states that have cooperating governors.
It's important to know, though, Tony, that I don't think people should have in their mind that American soldiers are going to be walking the border with AR-15s looking for people coming across the border. They're going to be in a support role. So they will be doing surveillance and reconnaissance and communications, transportation, medical, all of those things. But they're not doing the Border Patrol's job for them. They're enhancing them to be able to do their own job.
Right. They will. There's still questions to be answered, but it was very clear that they would be in a support role to the border officials, as you said, helping with technology, surveillance, transportation, to free up those agents trained in law enforcement duties. Did not say most likely they will not even be armed in most cases, at least not for enforcement purposes. Now, let me make this point, because I don't think people realize this. Arrests along the U.S. border with Mexico jumped to over 50,000 in March, which was a 37% increase from February, more than triple the same period last year. Now, the question is that because of an increase in crossings, or is it actual better enforcement because the rules of engagement, if you will, have allowed these border agents to do their jobs?
Yeah, you know, Tony, I go to the border at least once a year, and I talked to a guy down there named Zach Taylor who spent 28 years on the border, on the southern border, and he tells me that the morale in the Border Patrol has gone up exponentially. They have now been given the rules of engagement to be able to actually do their job. You know, prior to Trump taking over, they actually could not use lethal force unless their lives were in danger or unless they were fired upon. So it's not even their lives were in danger, unless they were fired upon. And they were also given very clear instructions. There are certain times when you just look the other way. And that has changed under President Trump.
General Boykin, one final question before we run out of time. The president making clear that troops, about 2,000 troops that are in Syria, will not be pulled out until the mission is accomplished, and so they'll be there for a while longer. Good news or bad news?
Well, I think it's very good news, and I think the president's making the right decision with that. You know, I'm not sure that people realize the Russians, the Turks, and the Iranians just had a big powwow in Ankara, trying to determine what they were going to do with Syria. Well, they're not going to do anything with Syria as long as there's a U.S. presence there. And don't be fooled into believing that ISIS has completely destroyed. It is not. But we have got them on the run, and I think if we stay the course and bring this to a conclusion, that would be in our own best interest from a national security perspective. I think that's what President Trump is trying to do now.
All right. Very good. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, as always, great to have you on the program. Enjoy your fishing trip.
I will.
Yes, he snuck out early on me, and he's going fishing. Yeah, he slipped out before I could catch him. All right, coming up next, did you know you are privileged if you are a Christian? Yeah, certainly it is a privilege to be a Christian. But that's a claim, more of a political claim, from some at George Washington University as they hold tonight the Christian Privilege Seminar. If they only knew what a privilege it was to be a believer. Anyway, Michael Jones, contributor at College Fix, will be here after the break with the details. Don't go away. More Washington Watch and your phone calls still to come. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, just 4 days after Easter tonight, George Washington University will host a training session for students and faculty that teaches that Christians, especially white ones, receive unmerited perks from institutions and systems all across the country. It's called Christian Privilege. Here's the actual title, Christian Privilege, but our founding fathers were all Christian, right? It's hosted by Timothy Kane, the interim associate director for inclusion initiatives at George Washington University. It's always interesting to me how these inclusion events usually exclude those like Christians. With us now is Michael Jones, a student at Auburn University and a contributing reporter with College Fix, and he's been tracking this. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thank you for having me on.
All right. So you reported that by the end of the training, the organizers want participants to be able to name at least three examples of Christian privilege and at least three ways to be allied with a non-Christian person. What's going on here?
Yes, sir. That's correct. It's essentially them bringing people together and having a training session to tell Christians, specifically white ones, how they are have an easier life and have all these built-in advantages when compared to non-Christians. And they essentially want it to be a learning experience so they can express how they think that Christians are privileged in the world today.
So what might they come up with?
I'm not too sure. I guess, I don't know. It's all tied to white privilege in the end, so I don't know if it's something to do with that or maybe they think, since we're like there are a lot of people with Christian beliefs that has something to do with it. Not too sure about it.
Now, Michael, you write for College Fix. You're a contributing editor there. Now, you reached out to them to kind of get a response. What did you hear?
I haven't heard anything back. I've probably reached out, probably sent about four or five emails and called once, and they just told me they weren't in a position to answer it right there. And so they told me to send them emails, so I sent another email, and I've still yet to hear anything back from them.
Well, obviously, that's one privilege that Christians don't have is getting a response to their questions. So we can mark that one off the list. You report that Kane also hosts the quote-unquote heterosexual privilege seminar, the cisgender privilege, the able-bodied privilege, the socioeconomic privileged workshop. I wonder, do they have a breathing privileged workshop, those who actually survive their abortion agenda, that they're privileged? I mean, how far does this go?
That pretty much cuts it off right there, I guess. It's all basically traditional stuff that we value, and it's all tied back into white privilege. So
have you been able to determine if and how much of university resources are being expended on this, which would be either government monies or the tuition funds that come from parents? I mean, what's funding this?
I'm not too sure. I'm positive it's sponsored by the school, and it's a public institution, I'm fairly certain, but I couldn't figure out any specifics related to the funding.
Now, do you know anyone that's going to be there so that you can follow up to get additional information as to how this workshop unfolds?
I do have somebody that will be there. I believe it's supposed to start at 5, and so I believe it's going on right now.
It's underway. Okay, well, we're going to follow up with you, Michael, and find out what you discovered so that I can, check. I want to know. I want to make a list of these privileges that I have as a white Christian in this country. Now, it's spiritually a great privilege, but I want to know how we are getting these unmerited favors through the systems here in this country. Michael, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back in touch with you after you discover what went on there today.
Sounds good. I'll get in touch with you as soon as we do, and thank you for having me. It was a good time.
All right. Thanks so much, Michael. This stuff's almost laughable if it weren't serious. I mean, these are workshops that are taking place on college campuses. This is our nation's capital. This is supposed to be one of these premier institutions of higher learning, and they're trying. Crazy. But, folks, if you, I wouldn't be surprised if we've got some of our College A's listeners on here that have discovered similar workshops on your college campus. Might even have entire semester-long courses on some of this stuff. And if you do, give me a call. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about the president sending the National Guard to the borders. And we're going to talk about trimming back that massive $1.3 trillion spending bill, the silver lining that could be there. Congress pulling this thing back and actually cutting out Planned Parenthood, cutting out all of this left-wing funding that the Democrats were angling for because conservatives didn't vote for it. That's how it got so big. Conservatives wouldn't vote for it, like the Freedom Caucus, because it wasn't a good bill. So in order to pass it, they added more to it to get the liberal vote. Well, now there's a chance to actually cut all that stuff out. Yeah, but you've got to weigh in on it. Remember, our form of government requires participation. And so does this program, by the way. Coming up next, your phone calls, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You can also send some to me on Twitter at T Perkins. Don't go away. We're coming back with your calls after this.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
(866) 372-7234, the number to call to get in on the Washington Watch conversation this afternoon. Hey, a couple of things here. Let me remind you, this program is made possible simply because of folks like you across the country who partner with us. If you'd like to be a partner with Washington Watch, with the Family Research Council, making this program available across the country to concerned citizens that care about this country, about their families, want to defend and advance the faith, well, go to TonyPerkins.com and we invite you to partner with us. All right, yesterday I had on the program activist mommy, Elizabeth Johnston, talking about an event coming up Monday, April the 23rd. It is the Sex Ed Sit-Out. Okay, if you missed yesterday's program, you can go to TonyPerkins.com. It's archived there. You can listen to the interview I had with her. It was in the third quarter of the program. And she is leading an effort, which now has caught on globally, for parents to pull their kids out of school on April the 23rd because of the pornographic sex ed curriculum that's being taught in many schools across the nation under the guise of, in many cases, anti-bullying. This is stuff being promoted by Planned Parenthood, ACLU, Human Rights Campaign. And, you know, if school officials are encouraging kids to walk out over the Second Amendment, well, you know, this is a good way to respond. So check this out. You can go to sexedsitout.com and find out how you can participate and be a part of that. We're going to keep up with Elizabeth over the course of the next couple of weeks and keep you informed on how you can be a part of that. Okay, let's go. Let me give you that number again, 866-372-7234. And first, we're going to go to Memphis, Tennessee, where Jim is on the line. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. I've kind of got a bad connection, so hopefully I can hear you and you can hear me. My question related to the omnibus is how much of that is actually state matching, and is the left using that to inflate the numbers so they can, you know, beat up the administration and so on about saying, look how big this is. Hopefully that makes sense. The other thing I wanted to throw out.
Wait a minute. Let me get clarity there, Jim. Jim, can you hear me? Let me get clarity. Are you talking about the $1.3 trillion, that being inflated because it is matching states' funding?
Right. I'm just wondering if that's involved any, and is the left using that to kind of muddy the waters to beat the Republicans up with it.
Okay, go to your next question, and I'll answer that in a moment.
Yeah, the next question was, leading up to the campaign, Hillary made a statement about if Donald Trump wins, then we're all in trouble. And I don't hear anybody trying to put a spotlight on that. And I just thought maybe that might be a good story.
Okay. Jim, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for the call. I will check into, Hillary said all kinds of stuff. We're fortunate she didn't win because we would have really been in trouble. The $1.3 trillion price tag is the federal spending. Now, some of that is state block grants, state what I call enticement funding, where they match it. But that's all the federal portion of it. So it's this is a big, big spending bill. Running counter, as our guest today, yesterday, have pointed out, runs counter to what the president promised and what Congress promised. And again, this is kind of a silver lining, this rescission provision that allows him with a simple majority to go back and begin cutting surgically. So all of that stuff that was used to candy coat this, to get the support of Democrats, or basically bribes, to get them to support this, can all be cut out if the conservatives support it. And I think most of the conservatives will support it if it's set, and they've said this on the program, if it sets us on a trajectory of moving toward a balanced budget. It's not going to get us there, okay? That's not going to happen. But if it moves us in that direction, if we're moving the ball down the field, so to speak, toward the goal, then they said they would support it. So this is, as I said earlier, a golden opportunity. Jim, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Dennis in Clinton, Iowa. Dennis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. I, among other things, am a retired Navy storekeeper. We were at the bottom end of the government spending in the case of the military. Now, I know one thing for sure. Just because money's appropriated, it doesn't have to be spent. Now, where there's an outside agency that has a claim on it, like, say, Planned Parenthood, whether there's any way to stop them from spending what they've appropriated, I don't know. But I would certainly favor doing whatever is necessary to delete the things or reduce the things that we can possibly do. I wonder, do we have to think of all the things that we want to cut or reduce and put them through on one bill and hope we can get 51 senators to vote for it? Or can we pick and choose, put something through, and then put something else through, and go through this in detail so we aren't ramming something down our throats like happened in the bill in the first place? Those are the things I would pick out. But yes, anyway, the House and Senate can agree to reduce or eliminate some of these things without affecting the military and the entitlement programs, go for it.
All right, Dennis, thank you for your call. Thank you for your service to our country. And let me just answer your question. The way this works, they really get one bite at the apple. I'm pretty certain. Now, there might be a provision here that would allow for more, but I think it's only one measure that it kind of pulls back the omnibus bill, allows them to revisit it one time, and everything has to be in that one bill. It's kind of like the reconciliation. They get one shot to do that a year. Everything has to be in that one bill. This is a rescission bill, and I believe it addresses the omnibus spending. And I think its origins, and I could be wrong on this, but I think based on what I've been able to research, that the origins of this is basically to be able to clean up these massive bills when they make mistakes, as they so often do, moving with such, moving faster than they should or slower than they should and then fast at the last moment and not really knowing what they're doing. And from the standpoint of Planned Parenthood, the way that funding works, there's about 800, about 8 $80 million, we're hoping actually might actually be addressed through an executive order by the president dealing with what was called the Reagan co-location provision, which said that if you do family planning, that's getting the Title X funds. That's where they get about $80 million, family planning. That if you take those funds, you can't do it in the same facility you do abortions in. They would choose to do abortions because it's much more lucrative for them, and so they would give up that $80 million in funding. The rest of their money, the bulk of the rest of their money, goes through Medicaid. And it's intermingled with that, so it's a little harder to get to. But I do think there's a way to get it done, and hopefully that's what lawmakers will do when they return. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Hugh in West Virginia. Hugh, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good afternoon, Tony.
How you doing?
I'd like to give three examples of Christian privilege.
Okay, go ahead.
The first is, whenever we give added deference or respect to a person just because he has reverend in front of his name, that's Christian privilege, because they expect it, and there's no reason for it. They don't deserve it.
Don't we do this? Okay, go. I'm going to let you finish your list, then I'll ask you some questions. Go ahead. So first is that because they're a reverend, we give them more respect. Okay, I got that one. Give me the second one.
The second one is when a Christian says you can't be moral without God, and specifically the Christian God, when we all know that you can be moral without God because millions of people are. But Christians continue to say it, but they continue to say a lot of things that are false. And the third The third one is I forget the term. When Gen Z kids complain, microaggression. Yeah, whatever. This might come under that, but whenever a person says, where do you go to church, that's Christian privilege too, because they have no reason to assume go to church. And they should not. And it's like asking somebody if he's straight. They have no right to assume a person is straight. But we're talking Christian privilege here. That's another example. And that would be considered a microaggression, which I'm not big on. You know, I'm just the topic came up, and I'm giving you three.
Okay, I don't really follow the last one because I mean, asking somebody where do they go to church, how that's privilege. I don't get that one. Let me go to the first one. The extending honor to a particular title like reverend. Well, what would you say then about doctors who held the title of doctor, and we kind of give deferential treatment to doctors? Same thing with politicians. We call them the honorable. We give deference to them. So is that you know, political privilege? How would we describe that?
We all also know that most politicians are not honorable.
But, I know, but they have that title. They're given that title.
And that's what's the word? That's
political privilege.
But calling a person honorable and calling a person reverend is different from giving them more respect. I don't give politicians any more respect than I do anybody else, whether or not I call them.
I disagree with you. I don't think just because someone has a reverend in front of their name does not mandate that they get additional respect any more than the honorable, you know, John Smith as a elected official should get. So I don't follow you. I don't think your logic there is holding up. But Hugh, I appreciate you listening. Keep listening, and we feel free to call in. I didn't ask about the second point. can't be moral without God. There are moral people who do not know God. So I would not say you cannot be moral without God. I would not say that. I would say that, as George Washington said, that when he looks at the pillars of our great experiment in democracy and self-government, that these two great pillars he talked about were religion and morality. And he's the one who said, you cannot have, and he's talking about in a society, he's not talking about individuals. I mean, there can be moral individuals without God. Now, it's a little harder if you don't have an objective standard of right and wrong. You have to have, Paul actually talked about this in Romans. He said that the law is inscribed on our hearts and that some people actually do it, which is really a testament to the fact that there is a God. But they may not acknowledge him, but they still are prompted by that, what has been in the past called the natural law, the moral law. It's universal. I mean, in every place, it is generally considered to be wrong to kill people, to cheat on your wife. These are standards that are really, they're ingrained in us as human beings because they're a representation of the moral law of God. You can still be moral and not recognize God. A society has a much higher probability of having morality if it is undergirded by religion. And that's what George Washington said in his farewell address to the nation when he stepped down from being president. So I would, but you can't, you, well, I don't have time to unpack all that. But I appreciate you listening and calling in. All right, we're just about out of time, and I'm not going to be able to get to the rest of the calls. But let me wrap up here with a couple of homework items. You heard Congressman Meadows saying, "Look, weigh in with your member of Congress, call your two senators, let them know that you want to see this massive $1.3 trillion spending bill pulled back and trimmed down." Defund Planned Parenthood, take out the funding that was stuffed in there in order to get Democratic votes. It'd be great to go back to the president's original budget that he presented, I guess, 4 or 5 months ago. I don't remember what it was. A while back. It was really a good budget. So call them, Capitol Switchboard, 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. Also, join activist mommy Elizabeth Johnson. If you didn't hear that interview yesterday, go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Okay, folks, out of time. Thanks for joining us. Have a great evening. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.